This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At the beginning of this school year, New York City began an anti-poverty program that pays low-income families for doing the right thing. Parents, for example, can get $25 for attending a parent-teacher conference or $200 to take their kid to an annual checkup. Students can get $25 a month for good attendance and $50 for getting a library card. Criticism comes from both the right and the left. Some conservatives argue the government shouldn't pay people for doing the things they ought to be doing anyway. And some liberals say it's demeaning to poor people to suggest that they'll only engage in good behavior if they're paid for it. Supporters like New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg dismiss both claims. Bloomberg says the government has lots of financial incentives to encourage actions it regards as positive, and with not a lot of success to show for past anti-poverty programs, why not try for something new? Later in the program, Muslims, cartoons, sensitivity, and censorship are on the opinion page this week. But first, paying poor people for good behavior. Is this a good idea? Can it work? Our number, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Linda Gibbs, New York City's Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, and she joins us from our bureau in New York City. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
It's nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And before we get into the why, would you just explain for us a little bit about how this program called Opportunity New York, how it actually works?
The program is a pilot that will involve 5,100 families from six of our highest poverty communities in New York City. The question that we want to ask is whether or not an incentive-based structure by providing cash rewards to individuals for accomplishing a set of tasks can change their trajectory of poverty in a way that existing programs just aren't having an impact.
Mm-hmm. And who's paying for this?
The program has been funded by a collaboration of philanthropic entities, and the mayor's thought in starting this is it's very new, it's very different from our traditional approach to social services, and to give it a better chance, we really ought to fund it privately. Test it with those philanthropic dollars. It's a perfect role for foundations to have to try new innovations that aren't necessarily proven. And then once it establishes whether or not it works, you have the basis of research and knowledge in order to demonstrate whether taxpayer dollars should be invested to continue it.
And how are you going to be able to tell if it works or not?
Well, we have invested in the most rigorous evaluation that we could. We've engaged the MDRC, which is a national workforce demonstration provider who is really well-respected across the country on Capitol Hill and, in fact, around the world in doing evaluations, design and evaluation of innovations like this. And so we've engaged them to help us to design the program and to put together the evaluation framework. It's a random control methodology so that we'll have a group of families who are participating in the pilot who will receive benefits and a comparable group that will be tracking simultaneously so that the outcomes for those two groups will be definitive in whether or not these incentives have actually changed the investment in health, education, and workforce development that we're looking to invest in.
Now, as I understand it, this program is modeled after a similar program which started in Mexico some years ago. And I know you and Mayor Bloomberg visited that program in Mexico last spring. Will something that works, I gather, in largely in rural areas of Mexico, going to be able to work in New York City?
Well, Neil, that is the question. And we found it intriguing enough when the mayor appointed a commission to study the experience of poverty here in New York City and asked them to find innovations across the country, and now we discovered across the world, of things that might make a difference. This program, the Conditional Cash Transfer Program, it came up time and time again. And quite frankly, initially when we heard it, we didn't really think that it was going to be relevant to us here in New York City because the economies of those countries where they are in place tend to be very poor. But the more we looked at it, the more we realized that there is many things in common with areas of very high concentration concentration of poverty here in New York City, where there is such isolation of those communities from the opportunities that exist just a couple of subway stops away. And so it really, we're asking ourselves the question, can this very different approach work here as well as it has worked in other countries?
So why? What's the goal here? Is the goal behavior modification or is it to help eradicate poverty?
The goal is to invest in the human capital in the households where poverty not only exists now, but has the strong likelihood of existing into the next generations. And we want to break that cycle by changing the outcomes for the children in the household around their well-being on health matters, on dental visits, and changing their outcomes in their education, not just school attendance, but the how they do on standardized exams and whether or not they're advancing through the grade levels at age-appropriate times. Then we're building on that international conditional cash transfer model by adding in an adult workforce component, incentivizing full-time employment and skills development. The entire goal is not to build a safety net around the family while they're in poverty. Rather, it's to invest in all of those things that we know will break the cycle of poverty across the generations.
Let's bring another voice into the conversation. Douglas Besheroff is a scholar in social welfare studies at the American Enterprise Institute. He's normally based here in Washington, D.C., but he's currently attending a conference in Bogota, Colombia, and he's been kind enough to take some time away from that to join us by phone. And very good of you to be with us today.
Neil, almost anything's better than a conference. Oh, I didn't say that.
Well, in any case, what do you think of this incentives program? Do you think it can work?
I dearly hope so. I have to admit that I'm of two minds about programs like this. On the one hand, the mayor and Linda, hello, Linda.
Hey, Doug.
Are exactly right that our societies are filled with incentives for people, largely in the middle class, but all people to do quite, quote, the right thing.
Right.
We want that. The problem is most of the incentives that we create are more long-term. That is, we try to embed those incentives not just within day-to-day behaviors, but we try, and this sounds a little bit Calvinist, but we try to get people to look to the long-term, to do something today so that there's a reward 5 years from now or whatever. And for young people in grammar school, you know, it's to get to a good college and so forth. And I think the challenge for this program will be to get beyond paying people to attend a parent-child conference or to take a test into internalizing the habits of good behavior or productive behavior. I don't want to be judgmental here, that make a long-term difference. And I would say before giving up the mic here, my knowledge of the research in the U.S., and there have been programs that tried similar things.
And we're going to be talking about one of those a little bit later in the program in Chicago.
It's quite mixed. Some of it has been somewhat successful, but much of it, that included, for example, giving young people money for passing a test and so forth, was not successful.
Get your response to that, Linda Gibbs?
Well, I couldn't agree more with Doug's assessment of the challenge. We don't want just to have transaction benefits, sort of one-offs, if you will. We very much want to see that those activities become quite habit-forming. And so having incentivizing, for instance, a parent-teacher conference, it's not just about having the parent go and talk to the teacher on that one or two times a year when the opportunity is available, but creating the habit of a stronger link and engagement in their child's education by being demanding, quite frankly, of the teacher and the school around the quality of the education and more demanding of themselves in terms of understanding what it is that is challenging their child's learning. Mm-hmm. And so that Doug is absolutely right. It may have value in and of itself if it improves individual transactions, but to break the cycle of poverty and to really invest in human capital in the way that this is designed, it is very much with the goal of seeing those activities maintain and perpetuate well beyond the period of the payment.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation as well. We're talking with Linda Gibbs, the Deputy Mayor of New York City for Health and Human Services, and with Douglas Besheroff of the American Enterprise Institute about New York City's new program of paying poor families money for doing, quote unquote, the right thing. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Lynn. And Lynn's calling us from Athens, Ohio.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay. Well, you know, I really think that this program is definitely worth a try. I kind of look at it as akin to teaching a small child to brush their teeth. It's really difficult to get a little kid to brush their teeth. But eventually, after rewarding them and praising them for doing it, they decide that having a clean mouth kind of feels better in general, and usually good habits are formed that way. And I really think that especially for a lot of impoverished people, there aren't a lot of immediate rewards for doing the right thing, for, you know, becoming a community member and doing positive things. It's such little steps. And I think that the guest you have that was speaking of the long-term rewards is a really good point, because it does take a while to internalize good behaviors to the point where you realize that it is very much so to your benefit.
Well, Linda Gibbs, I wanted to get your response to that, particularly in the ideas of, you know, if some critics say it's demeaning to pay people, this program assumes that they won't do these things unless they get paid.
And I think that really does misunderstand a lot of the dynamic that we're trying to impact in a poor household. There are many good things that a parent or a child needs to do, and the complex nature of living in poverty and how difficult it is to negotiate those multiple good things. Going to the doctor or going to a parent-teacher conference may mean that you're giving up your hourly wage. And so which is it? And there are high costs of those transactions that are not the same calculations that exist in better-off households. And so what we're trying to do is to relieve a bit the cost associated with the investments in the health and education of the children in the household, and at the same time incentivize the adults to develop their own skills. And so it really recognizes how difficult it can be to juggle multiple good things.
Hmm. Neil, I wonder if I could just ask Linda a question.
You can, but we're going to have to wait a minute for you to do it.
Okay.
All right. Douglas Besheroff, stay with us. Linda Gibbs will also stay with us. I'd like to thank Lynn very much for the phone call. And we'll be back. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We'll get to the opinion page a little bit later this hour and another controversy over Muslims and cartoons, freedom of speech, and censorship. But right now, programs that pay low-income families to do the right thing. Is this a good idea? Can it work? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog. That's at npr.org/blog of the nation. Our guests are Linda Gibbs, New York City's Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, who's going to be overseeing this program, and Douglas Besheroff, a scholar in social welfare studies at the American Enterprise Institute and professor of public policy at the University of Maryland. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And Douglas Besheroff, you had a question for Linda Gibbs.
Sure. Many of these programs have the following difficulty. You want to encourage the people who don't do something to do something, so you give them some money or some other incentive. But you have the other 80% of the people who are already doing it. As I understand Opportunity New York City, the benefit, so to speak, will go to everyone who achieves a certain thing, for example, getting a library card, and that will include all the people who already would have gotten a library card. Or it will go to people or children who pass a proficiency test, even if they would have passed it anyway. Is that right?
That's right. And in designing the program, clearly what we were looking for is what areas are the current outcomes to simply substandard. We, in these neighborhoods where the program is targeted, our high school graduation rate is below 45%. And so there's a huge gap in performance. And so while those who graduate, who would have graduated anyway, will get the benefit, what we're really trying to figure out is in the allocation of resources, is it a wise investment to incentivize the families directly with these cash benefits if it will bring that graduation rate, for instance, up 20 or 30 points? Is that amount of money for that movement worth it? And that's really was the challenge in designing the program. What areas should we incentivize? How much should each incentive be worth? In some cases, simple transactional things, $50 for a library card versus $400 for an on-time graduation. And how much movement does it create in the outcome? And all of those things will have to be calculated. My bet is that we got a lot of this off, and we're going to have to learn as we go along whether we over-incentivized in some cases or whether we made an amount so little that it simply didn't have an impact.
Hmm. Right. And what complicates this, and this is why I asked the question, is we're so used these days to talking about cost-benefit analysis, and the cost here is now not just cost to the people who wouldn't have been graduating otherwise. It's a much larger cost if you ever go to scale on this. And therefore, the impact on the people who wouldn't otherwise have graduated high school, the improvement in the high school graduation rate, for example, has to be much greater than you would otherwise suppose to make this
I think what he's getting at is, how do you measure success? If it's 2% more, is that going to be enough? If it's 20% more?
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes, and we have to look at that, but then we also have to look at the very high cost associated with the ongoing poor outcomes. And so a lower graduation rate is not the cost simply of that person not graduating, but it's also of the cost of what we know is going to happen in their future lives. They are twice as likely to live in poverty than someone who graduates from high school. They are more likely to be involved in the criminal justice system. So with all of this, it's about seeing the immediate improvement around the outcome that's being incentivized, but it's also trying to change all of those other trajectories where there will be other public costs incurred if we don't improve the outcomes.
Now, I heard the mayor say at a session, it'll be many years after he's left office before we know whether this worked.
All right. Well,
and I think that's right.
Well, let's see if we get a caller on the line. This is Kenneth. Kenneth calling us from Walterboro in South Carolina.
I think it's a bad idea because the citizens of that particular New York City, if they are low income, I'm pretty sure they're receiving Medicaid. Number two, you're going to throw money at something that parents should have the mental ability to, you know, take their child to the doctor, make sure their child try to break that cycle of not graduating. Just a bad idea. And you need to go in and break down and see what's going on in the homes of the students and see why they're not graduating. See where the parents' mental ability is and see what's going on that way.
Mm-hmm.
You're just throwing money at the problem.
Linda Gibbs? Yeah.
And I would say this is not intended to be entirely instead of other approaches. But what we do know is that we spend a lot of money on those other interventions. And we tend in New York City, in looking at households in need, that we assign a caseworker for every person or for every issue. And the question really here is, can this different approach have a better outcome? And it may be that that these incentives can work in some of these areas better than our traditional case management approach or service intervention approach. And we're really looking at this with wide open eyes, without a predisposition. You know, obviously, I hope it works tremendously, but if it doesn't, we're just not going to continue it. We honestly just want to know whether or not this can have an impact in a way that many programs now, you can only conclude that we're not doing enough because we have communities that are just suffering from astounding rates of poverty that just gets passed on generation to generation.
Thanks very much, Kenneth.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Chicago, where a similar, though much smaller, program has been up and running for 3 years. Pathways to Rewards was created by Toby Herr for public housing families in Chicago. Like the New York program, it also rewards parents and students for completing certain activities, like paying the rent on time, or for kids participating in an after-school program. Toby Herr joins us now from our bureau in Chicago. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Also with us in Chicago is Diane Clark, a parent who participates in the Pathways to Rewards program. And nice to have you on the program as well.
Thank you.
Toby Herr, you and Diane Clark, I know you've been listening to the conversation that we've been having about New York. How does your program differ from the ones that's just begun in New York City?
Well, the focus is on it's a reward structure, and it is sort of an anti-social service approach, but it is different. It's a more human development approach. And so what we've done is we have, the idea is to take these long-term goals, which is really the challenge, and break them down into very, very small sort of bite-sized pieces, so that, and then as you progress, you get rewarded for achieving a first step.
Uh-huh.
And then the next piece of this is you can't keep getting rewarded for the same accomplishment. So as soon as you master something, then you have to be sort of, we call it up the ante. So you have to move to the next step. So whereas you can start wherever you are, I mean, that's the piece of this. There's all these entry points, as I said, but you have to keep kind of moving up the ladder. So I'll give you an example. So we set goals we don't have a preset. There's no predetermined menu for mm-hmm. what you can receive awards for. So we have a quarterly cycle. So you'll set a goal, and you set the goal for just one quarter. So the ground rules are that goal has to be doable within one quarter. So
within 3 months. Yeah.
Within 3 months.
Yeah.
So it's small. So it might be for a parent working 2 months, or paying the rent on time for 2 months, or for the kids, perfect attendance or improved attendance, mm-hmm. or good grades or improved.
Well, you have an example sitting right there with you, Diane Clark.
Yes.
I wonder, I know you've been in this program for 2 years now. What was your first goal that you set for yourself?
My first goal was to stop smoking cigarettes.
Aha, uh-huh, that's not so easy, is it?
Yeah, it's not easy, but I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm. And when you got into the program, you've stopped smoking. So how many points did you get for that?
5 points for 3 days, which is $5 with doing 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't smoke a cigarette for 3 days, then that's $5.
I see. So what's the next goal that you set for yourself?
The next goal was for my children and I to stay in church, because we had stopped missing church too much. So it was to stay in church.
And that you got more points for. But again, you can't get being continually rewarded in this program in Chicago for the same thing again and again. So you had to find something else, another goal for yourself.
To stay on top of my bills, to pay my bills on time.
And do you think that this incentive helped you to achieve those goals?
Yes, I think it encourages us a lot, because, as I said, we tend to stay stagnated sometimes, me and my family. I'm just speaking on mine.
Sure.
We say we're going to do something, then we stop, and then we do it, and then we just don't forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
So with Pathway to Rewards, it helps us to stay on top. And also it makes it a contest, because we saw someone win first and second prize, and we thought we had first prize.
I see.
So it just pushes us more to want more.
So there's
to do more.
There's a Toby Herr, there's a social aspect of this as well.
Right. There's a social aspect of it. And that is, at the end of every quarter, there's a huge banquet, a rewards banquet. So all the families who participate, and even those that don't participate, are invited to this rewards banquet. And it's, you know, a catered dinner. It's a lovely sort of fancy evening. And then every family is called up, and on a PowerPoint presentation, every family's, the points they received are presented on the overhead, mm-hmm. on the PowerPoint, so that everybody in the room sees what everyone else got achievements were, what they got points for. So it becomes a kind of introducing a new norm in the community, which is the second goal of this. So it's not just at the individual family level. It's really to change community norms.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Diane Clark, we have an email question here from Sarah in Charlotte, North Carolina, who writes, I think this is an interesting approach to solving a difficult problem. However, in a lot of cases, impoverished families neglect health care and things like parent-teacher conferences, not because they fail to understand the long-term benefits, but because they can't afford the doctor appointments or the time off work. My question then, is this the best way to solve those problems? Assuredly, monetary incentives will offset the cost of health care and time off, but does incentives really address the root causes of poverty? Furthermore, is it worth further commodifying our health care and our education system? Do you think that this is getting to the root cause of the reason why you're poor?
Well, no, I don't think that's the reason why it's getting to the root why we're poor. I just think that what they're trying to do over there is helping what you can't do. Okay, like myself, I'm a single parent, and I have five boys at home. And I pray to God to help me to make do. And by me not recognizing, that's helping me make do. Pathway is helping me to make do. You know, because I didn't have the money to keep my rent on time. And then when it wasn't on time, I had to pay $10 extra.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the money for my children to wear to uniforms to school. But God has made a way. And I'm not saying God himself, but he put it into other people to do so for me. So I'm grateful.
We're talking with Diane Clark and Toby Herr in Chicago. Toby Herr is founder and director of Project Matcha, and this is about a program called Pathways to Rewards. We're also talking with Linda Gibbs in New York City, the deputy mayor there, and with Douglas Besheroff of the American Enterprise Institute about New York City's much bigger program, which it started this month, of paying people to encourage them to do the right thing. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is going to be Bob. Bob's with us from St. Louis.
Yes. I think, you know, anything that we can do to try to help people is good. And I don't know that anybody has a perfect solution, but I think a lot of these things that we all consider as something we should all know or is the right thing to do that we're paying people to do, a lot of times I think the right thing to do is something you learn over time. And we assume everybody knows this. We assume that everybody knows this is the right thing to do. And I think, like the email that you just read, a lot of times low-income people work crazy hours, different times, sometimes 10 and 12 hours a day. And if you take off an hour to go to a parent-teacher conference, you can come back and not have your job. If there's a way to protect that job like we do with family medical leave when people are sick, so that they can feel, okay, I can go, still come back, have my job, and I'm able to feed my family. And people can learn. I think too many times we have people who don't actually live in the problem, try to fix the problem for people who live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we involve more people who actually have that problem in trying to solve it, it seems like the people who are trying to solve problems are the people that don't have the problems, and we assume everybody knows.
Mm. That's an interesting point, Bob. Thanks very much for the call. I wonder, Toby Herr, one thing that Bob mentioned is time, and that's the other thing that we've talked about with Linda Gibbs and Douglas Besheroff about the New York program. If you're asking people to do these sort of accelerated goals, each one more challenging than the next, clearly, if you're going to achieve your goals, this is going to take time, and it's going to take commitment, not just from this mayor, but the next mayor and the mayor after that.
That's true. I mean, in Chicago, it's not a government-sponsored program, so it's really just a relatively small program, again, that's supported by the philanthropic community. So it isn't even at the point where government agencies are interested in it on a larger scale,
mm-hmm.
although the Chicago Public Housing Authority is watching it closely.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my answer to that is we have spent millions and billions of dollars on anti-poverty programs that have been sort of modest in their effects, if that. Why not? Do you know what I mean? Of course it'll take years. But if, you know, if a child does better in school, like we'll have a child with all D's and F's, and if that child will negotiate for points, no D's and F, only C's, and we can keep that going, that child's life will change.
I wonder if I could follow up and say two broader things.
Douglas Besheroff, I can give you 30 seconds.
Well, what Toby is saying is, in effect, we've had a poverty of anti-poverty ideas, and the reason this idea is getting so much attention is because the cupboard feels so bare. And we should say thanks to to Mayor Bloomberg for putting anti-poverty programs back on the front pages. Good luck to him, although there might be other ways to do this.
All right. Toby Hirth, thanks very much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And also our thanks to Diane Clark. Thanks for taking the time to come and speak with us on the radio.
Thank you. I hope I helped out a lot.
Oh, you sure did. Diane Clark is a single mother of five boys aged 5 to 16. She and her sons participate in Chicago's Pathways to Rewards program, which is the creation of Toby Hirth. They joined us from our bureau in Chicago. More calls about the program in New York when we come back, so stay with us. We're also going to be going to the opinion page this week and another controversy over Muslims, cartoons, freedom of speech, and censorship. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today, our main focus is on programs that offer cash payments to low-income families for graduating from high school or getting a dental exam, other things that considered to be the right thing, and whether or not these programs can help break the cycle of poverty. Our guest is Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services in New York City. Also with us, Douglas Besheroff, a scholar in social welfare studies at the American Enterprise Institute. And here's an email that we got from Charles. He writes, yet another program that gives incentives to those that have children at the expense of those that do not. In a world that's overpopulated and growing more so each day, this is the wrong thing to do. Instead, how about paying people not to have children? How about making parents pay their fair share of taxes for the services they use? Overpopulation is the worst problem in the world and makes solutions to other problems impossible. And I wonder, Linda Gibbs, what you think of that?
Well, this gets a little complicated, but there is a special component of our program that is attached to just adults related to their adult workforce skills and development. And that segment of the program will be tested for households that have Section 8 vouchers. Those are federal housing subsidies.
Right.
And it is possible in that program that we will have an adult-only initiative to evaluate. And I think overall, the goal here is really to think about not how to subsidize individuals while they are poor, not how to, you know, simply relieve the condition of their poverty, but how to change their life chances of living in poverty. And whether that's a single adult living alone or whether that is a family with children. And importantly here, what we know is generation after generation in many of our communities, unfortunately, poverty is just persistent. And so it is important to look at a two-generation approach where it's not just incentivizing and supporting the head of household, but helping to think about how we can change the outcomes for the children in those households so that they don't repeat that cycle.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, in terms of parents, would the money go to the money would mostly go to the mother?
We have in the program, it's primarily being paid to the head of the household for the activities of all of the members of the household. But when we get into those teen years, we actually proposing a split of the payment between the child and the parent, recognizing that it's the adolescent's own behavior that is going to be more decisive in achieving the outcomes. Mm-hmm.
Douglas Besheroff, is it fair? This program only helps people, or largely, with children.
Well, I'm not sure it helps people with children. It tries to help the children. So I think that's just fine. I think the other criticism that the caller was making was that, in effect, we're trying to deal here with the failure of public institutions. The fact that children are dropping out of high school, I think, has as much to do with the quality of the high school. So if we're talking about providing this aid so that young people will stay in school, and the benefit goes to the young people here, we darn well better make sure that being in those schools is not a waste of time. And that's probably 10 more shows.
That's probably 10 more shows, indeed. And we'll get to those as soon as that No Child Left Behind Act comes up for reauthorization. But
I do think it's an important component here. This is a very demand-driven intervention. What it is intending to do is to change consumer demands. I hope this program has the effect of making the parents and children in those schools much more demanding of the type of education that they're receiving, of the doctors and clinics in their neighborhoods, of giving good, full exams rather than a cursory, if at all, not being able to schedule them for an exam.
Oh, now, Linda, you've lost me. I think it's going to be just the opposite. The people will be delighted to be in and out. Get me my check.
Huh.
Well, there's a good deal of thought that's gone into how to structure some of these interventions so that if that is their instinct, that that they can't simply get it that easily. But I do believe that there is a lot of frustration in these poor communities with the services that they have been receiving at the community level.
Oh, of course. Sure,
and that they do have, they almost need to believe that they can have an impact. And I think that there, you know, we have a great advantage in New York City that there are so many other reforms that are going on, that there is a chance to feed in, have a different experience, and elevate that and really add to the experience that that their family can bring to those other broader reforms.
Linda has a good point about needing to measure this. There have been attempts that have been called Learn Fair to give families more money if the kids attend school. And one of the problems some of these earlier programs had is when do they take attendance? At homeroom in the morning.
Right, and then everybody leaves shortly thereafter.
And everyone leaves after that. Implementing this will be a bear.
All right, let's see if we can get one last caller in. This is Tony. Tony with us in Boulder, Colorado.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One thing that I consider myself relatively fiscally conservative, and I think that the private sector does this all the time. They subsidize or at least reward desirable behavior. If you look at lower insurance rates for people who are good drivers or lower health insurance rates for people who are smokers to not smoke, or even a good credit score, which gives people lower
mortgage payments,
lower interest rates. I mean, why not have the public sector try this? These incentives obviously work in the public sector, or they wouldn't do them. In the private sector, or they wouldn't do them.
Mm-hmm. So why is this, are you asking why this is at this moment foundation money and not public money?
Well, it seems to me that there's an implementation issue, but it seems to me that there's a role for the public sector in this, that this is, you know, this should be measurable and it should be, you know, subject to review to see if it's effective.
Linda,
I tend to agree with the caller, but there's always two sides to this. So the business incentives that we have are sometimes accused of penalizing people who smoke. You have to pay more health insurance or life insurance because you smoke. Should you have to pay more health insurance because you're overweight? My employer, indirectly, is penalizing people, I think, who are not physically fit. And we could go very far down this road and lose many supporters.
Linda Gibbs.
Well, you could view it as that they're actually rewarding you for remaining fit and not smoking, as opposed to penalizing.
Well, carrots and sticks depends on the recipient, I suspect. But Linda Gibbs, let me ask you: how long are the philanthropies, the foundations, prepared to support this study? If Mayor Bloomberg says it's going to be years after he's left office before we know whether it works or not.
Well, what we have is a two-year pilot that we will extend to a third year if the first the immediate benefits look like there's enough to merit an extension. But more importantly, we have a five-year evaluation after the end of the benefit program so that the families will continue to be assessed over the course of the 5 years from the end of the pilot payments. And so we have, again, that very rigorous pilot group and comparison group that are in the same communities, experiencing the same service systems, to be able to test exactly whether or not these incentives are the factor that is influencing any improvement in outcomes in the households.
Well, good luck to you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time to discuss this today.
Linda Gibbs, New York City's Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, with us from our bureau in New York. And we'd also like to thank Douglas Besheroff, a scholar in social welfare studies at the American Enterprise Institute, who is speaking with us by phone from Bogota, Colombia, where he's attending a conference. Thanks very much, Doug.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with the opinion page in just a moment.